Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. The nation was horrified in 2012 when 20 children and six teachers were gunned down in a Newtown, Connecticut school. The president and lawmakers across the country promised reforms, but little or no change has occurred. That has frustrated Hillary Clinton, who said that gun reform is needed.
The vast majority of Americans, even law-abiding gun owners,
want
background checks that work, information that is shared immediately, and an awareness that, you know, we're going to have to do a better job protecting the vast majority of our citizens, including our children, right, from that very, very, very small group that is unfortunately prone to violence and now with automatic weapons can wreak so much more violence than they ever could have before.
In the absence of gun control reforms like that, cost has been raised as one issue in some districts. Metal detectors and extra security personnel don't come cheap. WOSU's Tom Borgerding reported about that this morning. You can listen to his story again. Check out the link on our website at WOSU.org/allsides. He's with us now. Welcome to the show, Tom.
Thank you, Ann. Good to be here.
Tom, the Ohio School Boards Association this summer begins training school principals and other staff on how to respond to an active school shooter. What are schools already required to do when it comes to these kinds of emergencies?
Well, in this this OSBA program, this is actually the very first time they've trained school staff in active shooter incidents. But Ohio schools already have to develop and put in place a crisis response plan and file that with the Attorney General. The OSBA active shooter training is above and beyond that, really, because, you know, you can have various kinds of crises in schools. The active shooter is the most...
It's kind of specific.
It's kind of specific, and it's also, you know, just the most critical.
When it comes to filing those emergency response plans to the Attorney General's office, are there guidelines for those?
There are guidelines, and the Attorney General has signed off on most of them already. There are a few schools in the state that there were deficiencies in their crisis response plans, and so the Attorney General would send them back and tell them to fix them. But they have to have this plan on file. So
what is this additional training from the OSBA intended for?
Well, this is intended specifically for school principals, administrative staff, and teachers. And they're trying to minimize really a death toll when an active shooter shows up in a school. And according to Richard Castor, he's with the OSBA. He was at this training yesterday at Thomas Worthington High School. He says Newtown was, he described it as the educator's 9/11. And not to minimize Columbine or Virginia Tech, but he says, you know, the deaths of 21st and second graders, just the shock value was just over the top. And the weak link, he believes, and other educators believe, is what he called the human factor in the belief that, you know, it could not happen here. And so OSBA has undertaken to begin training administrators and staff to possibly arm themselves, you know, after CCW training and getting all the permits, arm themselves, because what they have found in these active shooter incidents is that time is really critical. The FBI analysis shows that when an active shooter shows up in a school, a victim is injured or killed every 25 seconds. So if someone calls the cops, I mean, even in Columbus,
even if the police arrive there in the best of time, it's not going to be soon
right.
enough.
Well, in 3 or 4 minutes, I mean, you could have, I'll have to do the math. What's that?
Let's just
six
jump
or
and
seven
six
fatalities?
Or eight. Yeah, right.
Yeah, six or seven fatalities. And in rural districts, it may take a police officer 25, 30 minutes to show up at a school if he's on the other side of the county. And that would increase the death toll even more. So this training is designed to intervene and confront, engage the active shooter almost immediately.
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. So why not just put a security officer in every school in Ohio?
Well, as Castor explained, there's, I think the last count was 614 school districts in Ohio.
Mm-hmm.
There's over 3,000 buildings. to put a school resource officer in each school is financially prohibitive. I mean, one could argue back and forth, well, what's the cost of not putting an officer there? Most districts, most districts, he says, could not afford it. Columbus, for instance, has over 100 school buildings, so they would be talking about 100 police officers.
Well, Tom Borgerding, thanks a lot for joining us. If you want to listen to Tom Borgerding's story, you can go to our website at WOSU.org, and it's at the top of the website at WOSU. We'll have it a link at our website at WOSU.org/allsides if you want to check that out. Tom, thanks again.
Yeah, can I do one postscript? Because sitting in the training yesterday, this was kind of brought home pretty clearly that in most active shooter incidents, the killing and the maiming of victims often stopped as soon as the shooter heard the siren. So as soon as the police were even approaching the building. Mm-hmm. And so this was an FBI study, and it helped change thinking among law enforcement and school personnel to engage active shooters as quickly as possible rather than waiting for a SWAT team or something like that. So that's why they're talking about, arming some school officials to intervene as quickly as possible. That's right.
Because rather than
it changes the mindset, according to Lieutenant Paul Hall. He's the SWAT commander in Columbus. So when an active shooter believes that, you heard in the cut this morning, believes he's being hunted rather than, being the aggressor, his mindset changes.
Okay. Tom Borgerding, thanks a lot.
Thank you, Ann.
Safe Havens International is one nonprofit school safety organization that trains school administrators and teachers to think about the unthinkable, that think about and eliminate that weak link, and that doesn't need to involve expensive equipment. Joining us now is Safe Havens Senior Safety Analyst, Dr. Sony Shepherd. Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Is the idea of specialized training and things like metal detectors, is that the idea that you work with?
Well, we work with a lot of ideas. One of the things that we often tell our clients who are looking at metal detection programs is to really take a balanced approach. There are ways to beat a metal detector. And to really run an effective metal detection program, it costs about $500,000 to $1 million a year. And so it becomes quite costly. We like to lean on things that don't cost so much and have an equal effectiveness, such as training, exercises, drills, understanding what the emergency procedures are in the building and knowing how to act on them.
What has your research shown you about training teachers for these kinds of situations? This isn't necessarily what they signed up for.
Oh, you're absolutely right. Training teachers, and by the way, we find teachers are the most receptive because this is where they work. Mm-hmm. So they're very invested in making sure that their workplace is safe. But we train teachers on things like lockdowns, how to use them effectively, how to use evacuations effectively, and to think and to make those hardcore decisions. We have a saying, the first 30 seconds of a crisis can dictate the outcome. So within the first 30 seconds of decision-making, you can dictate whether or not the crisis will end successfully or not. And we actually put these types of techniques in our book, Staying Alive, How to Act Fast and Survive Deadly Encounters. There are other things that we can train teachers on. For example, visual weapons screening, how to spot specific behavioral indicators on when someone's carrying a weapon. So there are some things that people display when they're carrying a weapon that I can look at if I'm a secretary in the front office, and I can look out into the parking lot, and I can tell when someone's walking through the door whether or not they're carrying a weapon.
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. I'm talking with Sony Shepherd. She's the Senior Safety Analyst at Safe Havens International. It is a nonprofit school safety organization. What is there a difference in the safety procedures between American schools and those schools in other countries where you also do work?
The difference is the resources. American schools, by and large, have more resources than we've seen in other countries. However, there are some countries, such as Israel and other countries that have experienced these type of violent incidents. They have taken very proactive measures. For example, when their students go on field trips, there is an armed security person with them. So they've gone to the other end of the pendulum. There are some other countries such as the UK and Canada who have some real issues and have that we've worked with, and they have some of the similar crisis procedures, and we train their teachers and principals and those type of things. And what we found in our research is if teachers and principals can follow those crisis procedures within the first 30 seconds, there's usually a better outcome.
How do you prepare an elementary school differently from, say, a high school or a college campus?
The procedures would be the same for elementary school because we're talking about teachers. The difference is how we exercise the students, and that's one thing that schools often forget or they don't take as seriously. Even your fire drill exercises are an evacuation exercise. They are evacuation exercises. So with elementary schools, we go through the same type of process. However, we talk to the kids, we're more gingerly, and we do it more in elementary schools because those young kids really have to get used to walking fast and boarding a bus and that sort of thing. So the procedures stay the same. It's the exercise and simulations that may differ.
Do the kids get it that this is about more than a fire drill?
Yes. Especially at the high school level, uh-huh. Middle and high school, I've had students come to me and say, am I doing this right? Because they want a safe school.
Mm-hmm.
And they're very concerned about their own well-being. And so I see more kids today that are really asking those questions, like, what do I do? Because they're seeing it more. They're exposed to the things that are going on more. And so they're very engaged in the process.
One of the things your organization does is assess schools for safety. What are the factors that go into an assessment?
A lot. We've assessed over 6,000 schools, and everything from K-12 to private schools to charter schools. Some of the things that we look at are the physical aspects of the building. There's something that I call body language. What does your building say? And a lot of people think, well, what does this have to do with safety? We don't want your school to be the easy target. If someone wants to target your school, we want them to be able to drive up, look at that building and say, no, not this building, not today.
Hmm.
So we look at the physical aspects. We look at how personnel use the building. Are you propping doors open? Are you locking classroom doors, spaces that are not used? That's called space management.
Mm-hmm.
And we also look at student supervision. Again, this speaks to the overall climate of the building. If I pull up in your parking lot and I see a group of kids that are unsupervised, they're not being adequately watched over, then I would probably think that that's an easy school, that the staff don't care. And so that's a school that I may end up targeting as a bad person. So, you know, we look at those types of things and identify those gaps and vulnerabilities so you could fix them.
When you say a possible perpetrator looking at a building saying, no, not this building, not today, you also want to balance that with this is a place you're bringing children every day and you're expecting teenagers to go to if it's high school every day. And there's a balancing act there, right?
Oh, absolutely. You know, one of the things that we hear often is that we don't want to turn our schools into prisons. And I absolutely agree with that notion.
Some are,
but one of the things that we say is that if you're not doing these things, your school ends up being a prison of fear. And we don't want that to happen either. So there is a balancing act. There are some measures that are aesthetically pleasing, such as locking a door.
Mm-hmm.
And by no means are we saying put up fences and make it Fort Knox. However, if you've got a door, an exterior door that can be locked and it's propped open with a stone or it's propped open with a brick, one of the things that I say is that why invest millions of dollars in all of these extra measures when we haven't taken care of the things that are free? And oftentimes the things that we have at our disposal that are free, such as locking a door, those things don't cost a lot, but mm-hmm. they improve the school drastically.
How did the Newtown shooting affect what Safe Havens International does? Did it, or did it just validate what you already had in place?
Well, we've been doing this since 2000.
Mm-hmm.
So we've been doing this a long time. The Newtown incident it really made us busy. I think just as an observation, it seemed to be a wake-up call for people. And not to diminish Columbine or Virginia Tech or these other things, but first, as a country, when you mess with the babies, you know, people have a strong emotional reaction to that. And so we got a lot of calls, and for people wanting assessments, schools, they're really hungry to know what their vulnerabilities are because they're eager to fix them, and they want to fix them the most effective and cost-efficient way. And we're on board with that. That's what we help schools do. And as long as schools have that mindset that, you know, it can happen, therefore we've got to put measures in place to prevent it, to respond to it, and to recover from it, that mindset is the mindset that we like to get.
All right. Dr. Sony Shepherd, thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you.
Dr. Sony Shepherd, she's Senior Safety Analyst at Safe Havens International. Coming up, we continue our conversation about how to protect our schools in the case of a live shooting. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides. I'm Ann Fisher. Since the massacre in Newtown, Connecticut in 2012, parents, school administrators, and legislators across the country still struggle with how to keep schools safe. We just spoke with the senior safety analyst at Safe Havens International. It's a nonprofit organization that works on training school personnel on how to protect themselves and the children that they take care of. Joining us now, some believe tighter security and stricter gun laws would help. Others, including the Buckeye Firearms Foundation, believe teachers should be armed and trained. Joining us now is Buckeye Firearms Foundation trainer, Joe Eaton. Welcome to the show, Joe.
Good morning. How are you today?
Fine, thanks. Your organization started offering free gun training for teachers to help them protect students after the Sandy Hook massacre. That was just free for, I think, about 20 or 24 people, right?
Actually, by the end of the summer, we will have over 300 Ohio teachers that have been through our training program.
What kind of training is it? What do you do?
Well, you know, going back to your last guest, what we're looking to do is similar to what we do for fire safety in schools, is put in a layered approach that we can use to keep our kids safe. The training was part of a program put on by John Benner at Tactical Defense Institute, who's been doing school violence training, school resource officer training and stuff for well over a decade. And he helped us develop what is a 3.5-day program for the teachers, which spends a lot of time helping them, as the previous guests have mentioned, develop the mindset, develop the skills that they need to see the situations ahead of time, to know what the concerns that they should be looking for. Look for other options, such as something as simple. Do I have to get my keys out of my pocket to lock the door, or is the door locked all the time and I unlock it when I need to? And, you know, we go beyond that. They spend a 4-hour program in trauma medicine, you know, which is very effective keeping the kids safe, even outside of the active killer situations. You know, should it be a bus accident, bleacher collapse, or, you know, tornadoes or storms such as we've seen very severe here in Central Ohio in the last couple of days. And then we do get into the actual tools of using a firearm in a school type of environment. They spend almost 20 hours developing those skills. They end up spending about another 4 hours of that in what we call force-on-force scenarios, where they use airsoft training pistols against other teachers in scenarios. And we walk them through these shoot, no shoot scenarios. We let them experience what the chaos will be, and we help them to develop that confidence that even in these terrible, chaotic situations, they will be able to make the right decisions, they will have the skills, and they will see that the information that we're giving them and letting them see hands-on, it will really work in one of these situations.
You know, I asked marathoner great Billy Rogers yesterday if he thought anybody could run, anybody with, you know, two legs at work could run, and he said yes. Do you, what if you found yourself training somebody that you didn't think could handle a firearm under the circumstances of a live shooting?
You know, that's very important because, you know, we're not saying that we should have all the teachers out there armed. We're mm-hmm. looking for the ones that have this desire and have this love for our children mm-hmm. that they've already shown over and over. They will die for our children. And what we're looking to do is the ones that choose to use a firearm as a tool to keep themselves and our children safe, to give them that option. Out of the 1,500 Ohio teachers that have signed up for this program, we surveyed them and found out that over 40% of them already have their concealed handgun license in Ohio, and they're carrying a firearm for protection every other hour of the day except for when they're in the schools with our children. And all that they're asking is to have that same ability to keep the children at school safe as they do to keep their own families and themselves safe when they're outside of school.
The foundation released an article in 2009. It was titled Lesson Number 22, Pretend Gun-Free School Zones, a Deadly Legal Fiction. It argues that gun-free schools are actually more vulnerable to attacks. How does it make them more vulnerable?
Well, if you look at any of the multiple victim shootings that have happened over the past couple of decades, I think it is every single one except for one has occurred in a place where the legal ownership of firearms is restricted. And as the last couple of guests have mentioned, and we've done a lot of work with Dr. Castor on this FASTER teacher training program that we're doing, the people that are committing these horrific acts are not looking for a fight. They're not looking for a challenge. They're looking to devastate as many lives as possible. So as soon as someone effectively confronts them, the large majority of these end up taking their own lives, or in some cases, that they immediately surrender and succumb. And mm-hmm. that's what we're looking at doing. The stopwatch of death is Ron Borsch out of Cleveland has deemed the timeline that your guests were talking about is the most important thing. In the Virginia Tech massacre, we had 7 to 8 people were being murdered every single minute. Even an exceptionally fast 3-minute response by a police squad or officer, that puts us so far behind the curve that the only real solution that anyone has been able to come up with now is to having effective deterrent right there when the situation starts.
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. We're talking about how we go forward defending ourselves, defending our children against live shooters. My guest right now is Joe Eaton. He's a trainer for the Buckeye Firearms Foundation. If you have a question or comment, give us a call, 614-292-8513. You can also email us at allsides@wosu.org. In Reno, someone with a gun tried to stop the shooter in that case and was killed. Can't guns make some people too confident in the heat of the moment, particularly if they're not properly trained?
Well, you know, there are always unique situations, mm-hmm. and the problem with that husband and wife team is one thing that we address a lot in our situations, because so far the majority of the killers that have went into the school have acted alone, but mm-hmm. the criminals in general are learning to act in teams, and that is something that anyone in the situation has to be aware of, and especially in a school environment, getting focused just on the one threat. You've got to be aware of other threats that are around you, and plus all of the children that are in that situation. That's something that we spend a lot of time teaching the teachers, is how they can safely move through a crowded school, how they can manipulate and retain control of their firearms in a chaotic, hectic environment like that, and to make the right decisions. So, you know, there will always be exceptions, but the one thing that, as we said, the teachers have shown over and over again is that they will stand between these murderers and our children, and all we're doing is the ones that choose to give them the option to stand between that murderer and our children with any tool that they choose to.
What are you asking of teachers for pre-training, or what kind of training requirements do you have for teachers to participate in your training program?
Well, for Ohio in general, the decision on who could carry firearms in the schools is held right at the school board level. Mm-hmm. They make all of the decisions. To meet federal law, any people that the school boards authorize have to already have their concealed handgun license in Ohio. That is one of the pre-requirements. We do also offer to the teachers who are fairly new to this, as we said, 40% already had their concealed handgun license, but we still have a sizable number that are just starting to look at personal protection that way. We do offer some primer classes, which get them up to speed so that they can get the maximum advantage out of our faster training class, which is a very, very intensive 3.5-day training class.
There has been concern that a student or someone else could potentially take a gun and threaten a teacher with their own gun. Is this a threat that concerns Buckeye Firearms, or is that something that you discuss or prepare for in these training sessions?
It is. We cover that, but you know, it goes back to really the eye-opening thing that we saw is that 40% of these teachers, we hear the arguments, well, how will they keep it concealed? How will they keep it from being taken away from them? How will they know when to use it, not to use it? 40% of the teachers that have signed up for this program are already doing all of that every other hour of the day except for when they're with our children. They don't have to worry about how they already are keeping it concealed. They're already keeping someone else from getting access to it. They're already making these decisions on when they should or should not use it because they've been carrying their concealed handgun. We've had it in Ohio for over 10 years now. So again, if you look at it from that logical standpoint, that we make them leave this most effective tool for keeping themselves and our children safe, we make them leave it at home when we put them in the school buildings, it's really a simple step. Let them do what they're already doing every other hour of the day outside of school.
Explain to me how it works, because when a live shooter appears, there no one's ever expecting it per se. Where would a teacher keep a gun so that it's available and useful in a case of an emergency like that?
You know, the only effective place is to have it readily at hand with them. Generally, on their person is where it is, because as you said, none of this is expected. So, you know, the teachers could be in the lounge, they could be in a conference with the administration, they could be in the classroom with their students. You know, having that immediate access, and that's one thing that we've saw. Virginia Tech, there was almost, I think it was a 3-minute delay from the time that the second part of the murders happened until the police were actually called. People do not expect this to happen. They hear the noises. They don't recognize it because, again, inside the buildings, gunfire sounds much different than Hollywood has us all believing. Mm-hmm. And they thought it was construction that was going on campus. And, you know, all those nail guns are awful loud today. I'm not doing anything about it. And, again, you know, having that ability to react as absolutely quick as possible is the only thing that we've came up with that will save lives.
What are some improvements that schools could make to the physical plant to help teachers, help administrators pull this off in the case of a shooter?
You know, your guest from Safe Haven International hit it dead on. There are very simple things that they can do. Keep the access to the building restricted. You know, we talked to even the safety plans. We've talked to the 1,500 teachers. There was a certain percentage of the teachers that said, we know our school has an emergency plan like this. We've never seen it, and we don't even know who we would go to and talk to about this. And that's really the first steps that we need to make. A company that I work for does a lot of maintenance on school buildings, mm-hmm. and they came to me with their list of PMs for the year. They do their fire drills once a month. They do their lockdown or violence drills once a year is all that they're doing. So which one are we really taking seriously to help keep our kids safe?
Lisa in Columbus, you're on the air with Joe Eaton from the Buckeye Firearms Foundation. Hi, Lisa.
Hi, how are you?
Fine, thank you.
I just wanted to ask Joe, how do you counsel those teachers who are taking firearms into the school? How do you counsel them on the liability if they misshoot or shoot someone mistakenly? That was my first question. And my second question is, if teachers are allowed to bring guns into the school, wouldn't some parents ask that children are allowed to bring guns into the school as well? Because, you know, students aren't the only one with mental illness. Teachers have mental illnesses also. They have stresses also, divorces, other problems that they bring into the classroom.
In other words, you're suggesting there's a slippery slope there.
There is a very slippery slope there. I mean, I know it sounds ridiculous, but that's why I'm bringing up the question.
Nothing sounds ridiculous.
I'll hang up and let your guest answer. Thank you.
Okay. Thanks, Lisa. First of all, Joe Eaton, let's take the first issue of liability. What do we know about that? How are the teachers? Have the teachers brought that up to you?
You know, that is always a concern, but you have to look at it in the totality of the event. What is the liability if a situation such as happens so many other places, happens in your school, and the parents and the teachers come to you and say, why didn't you do anything at all? There were options out there. There are proven methods that work. You know, I used to, in the local media, talk about this. I've been involved with this for well over a decade, and I used to tell them this type of activity is coming to Ohio. You know, then just 2 years ago, we had Chardon High School. And, you know, it sickens me now not to say it's coming to Ohio, but to say it's going to come to a school in our area. And that is the real liability, is sitting around and doing nothing, saying that I have filed my emergency plan with the state attorney generals. That means that our kids are safe. That type of mindset and that type of attitude from the school administrators is what is making our children safe. We've had 30 schools that have just worked with Buckeye, 30 districts in Ohio that have worked just with Buckeye to get more advanced training, to take their type of practice seriously. Even the fire drills that we have, very few schools, they have the same fire drill every month, but they don't even practice. What do you do if the fire is in the hallway where your main escape is? Do they even practice the alternate routes? That's the thing that we really want to focus on, is getting this multi-layered approach to keeping our kids safe.
And then the second question about the slippery slope, that teachers can bring them. Well, why not the kids? You know, why isn't everybody packing at the end of the day?
Number one, the children cannot possess firearms at all until they're 18, or handguns, particularly until they're 21. But again, the threat is not from the firearms. The threat is from individuals out there that want to commit violence against our children. Mm-hmm. And that is where the threat is. We can't look at an inanimate object and say we have gun violence in the United States. We have a violence problem in the United States. And just as many of the criminals use the firearms to commit that violence, many, many more honest, law-abiding people use those same tools to keep themselves and their families whole. And that is the part that gets lost in a lot of this. We focus on the tragic side out there, mm-hmm. but we miss a lot of the families and the circumstances that are resolved to the good of society instead of the bad.
We have an email. They ask about using mace or tasers instead of guns, giving teachers mace or tasers.
Again, you know, that's certainly an option, and any teachers out there that are not comfortable or do not want to put the time and the effort involved in getting the training to use a firearm in that type of situation, you know, again, we've got to get over this mindset. In my mind, the most outrageous part about Virginia Tech is that we had our men and women, these young college-age kids in the prime of their lives, they're most fit, they're most active. And we had taught them for so long that violence is not acceptable in schools, to sit there and wait to be murdered. And that is where we've got to change this. We've got to let our kids know that sometimes violence is not only acceptable, but if people are out there killing our children, violence is not only acceptable. That's the only solution to stop that situation.
So in a Virginia Tech case, you're thinking if the students had been armed, if someone had been armed, if those out there who already are carrying would have been able to have them on campus, is that what you're saying, that they could have saved lives then?
Everything that you've seen out there comes down to the timing on it. If we are mm-hmm. sitting waiting for a good guy with a gun to show up, more lives are going to be lost. In every one of these situations, as soon as any type of effective resistance is put out there, these people stop what they're doing, and a vast majority of them end up taking their own lives at that point. There have been very, very few of these. Columbine was about the closest one in recent time where they have actually planned to barricade and to have a long, drawn-out affair. Mm-hmm. These people, that is not what they're looking for. They are looking for defenseless people that they can victimize. And as soon as somebody puts out any type of resistance or says, I'm not going to be defenseless, whether it again is like the ALICE program is teaching, fight back with chairs, with fire extinguishers, you know, if they choose mace or something else, that is a perfect example of what we're looking to get, is this layered approach in there. Okay. Let the teachers decide how they can best keep themselves safe.
All right. Joe Eaton, thank you so much for joining us today.
Oh, I appreciate the time.
Joe Eaton, he's a trainer for the Buckeye Firearms Foundation. They have embarked on a training program for teachers across the state. Coming up, we're going to hear from the Ohio Coalition Against Gun Violence about what they see as the solution to these problems of gun violence in the schools. You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides. I'm your host, Ann Fisher.
I respect gun rights. But the idea that, for example, we couldn't even get a background check bill in to make sure that if you're going to buy a weapon, you have to actually go through a fairly rigorous process so that we know who you are, so that you can't just walk up to a store and buy a semi-automatic weapon. It makes no sense.
That was President Obama, of course, expressing his frustration with the lack of gun control legislation in Congress, particularly in the wake of the 2012 massacre at the Newtown, Connecticut school. He is not alone. According to a Washington Post poll, 9 out of 10 Americans favor required background checks for gun ownership. So why the disconnect? Joining us is the executive director of the Ohio Coalition Against Gun Violence, Toby Hoover. Hi, Toby.
Hi, Ann. How are you?
Fine, thank you. Toby, you're a survivor of gun violence. Can you explain to us the situation you were in and how that's affected your work with the coalition?
Yes. As a very young person, I got a telephone call one day and was told by a relative that my husband had just been shot. And it certainly was the direct result of easy access to buying guns. And, you know, particularly speaks to exactly what the president was saying as far as background checks and, you know, making people responsible for who they sell to. I think that's the part of it that we always miss is people will, you know, counter the background check with, well, you know, the so-called bad guys aren't going to get one anyway. Well, the background check system is also set up so that you and I, as the law-abiding people, have to abide by those rules and will, and therefore will not sell to people that shouldn't have them. This was a case where it was a guy that shouldn't have had one, and he could easily buy one. And so from there, it was a matter of, you know, what do you do? Do you, you know, sit around and become an introvert and lock yourself in the house because you're afraid of every other human being? Or do you decide that, well, I'm going to try to keep this from happening to anybody else? And so that's sort of the mission that I've been on for a number of years. And, of course, the school shootings are the ones that I think are closest to everybody's hearts.
It cuts both ways. We just spoke with Joe Eaton of the Buckeye Firearms Foundation. They're training teachers and administrators to manage a shooting crisis with firearms. There's no lack of volunteers for this program. They've trained 300 so far. What do you make of that, and what would you suggest as an alternative?
Well, yeah, I've heard a lot of things on your program this morning, Ann, that were really interesting from all the different guests, and, you know, would agree with a lot of them until it comes to actually arming people. And I think we're going to do that it needs to be a resource officer. They're trained not only to handle firearms, but they're trained to interact with parents, teachers, and children. And so that makes a huge difference. But the idea that the gun is the answer, I think, is totally going the wrong direction. Some of these other trainings are necessary in today's world. But again, I think that it is for teachers, staff, and resource officers, not children. We in this country tend to want to make the kids take all the responsibility for what happens, and it's not their responsibility. They're the children. We not only owe them safety, we owe them the fact that they're allowed to be children. And so it's our job to make sure that they don't have to try to prevent this, that it's the rest of us. And so we can take the, you know, the precautions with locking the doors and educating and all of that. But if we look at the shooters that came into schools, there are two things that stand out. And then one of them is always, you know, did they have a mental problem? Could some kind of care have intervened here? Could we have recognized it beforehand? Those kind of things are happening in the country now, especially since Newtown. You know, the other part of it is, you know, what are we willing to do to stop this? And people always say, well, we can't all have resource officers. There's too many buildings. And I think the first man that was on this morning
Tom Borgerding reporting about what the School Boards Association was saying.
Tom said that there were 3,000 buildings. Okay, so it would cost a lot of money to put a resource officer in 3,000 buildings. Mm-hmm. I'm sure we can be a little more clever than that. But we could share officers and nobody would know which building they were in, all of those kind of things. But when you come to putting this fear in a child's mind as he goes to school every day, mm-hmm. that he might get shot and he might have to protect himself, I think it's cruel what we're doing to our children. And we talked about, well, gee, there's all these teachers that want to be armed. That percentage that they're talking about training, we have over 100,000 teachers in the state of Ohio. So if, 400 of them already have their permits to carry and 1,500 want to see what the training is about, that also is certainly not the majority of people that think there ought to be guns in the school.
You're listening to All Sides with Dan Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. I'm talking with Toby Hoover, the executive director of the Ohio Coalition Against Gun Violence. If you have a question or comment, give us a call, 614-292-8513. Kyle in Lancaster, you're on the air. Hi, Kyle.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
You bet.
I just wanted to say, as someone who previously worked for multiple years for a federal firearms dealer, mm-hmm. the extremely stringent process to get a firearm involves the FBI, involves ATF, and has very, very severe repercussions for anybody who doesn't follow the guidelines. Adding stricter and more stringent laws won't stop people from illegally obtaining firearms. And, Newtown was brought up. His mother legally purchased her firearm, mm-hmm. and he took it without her permission. So trying to make it harder for people who want to follow the rules isn't going to benefit anyone.
What about all those private gun shows, though, Kyle, where you can purchase a firearm without the background check that you're talking about?
The private gun shows, and this goes for anywhere in the country,
mm-hmm.
the private gun shows, it's their legal responsibility. It's called the NICS system.
Mm-hmm.
It's the background check information to find out if someone is legally allowed to obtain in this country. That is on the individual resellers. So it's not like these resellers at these big gun shows are purchasing them legally and then trying to legally distribute them. That is on that individual person.
Okay. So they have to answer for who they sell to.
Right. If I purchase a gun in bulk, if I purchase 200 firearms, and I go to one of these gun trade shows, mm-hmm. and I sell one of those without doing a background check, which is an 800 number that's very easy to pick up and call, if I do that and that weapon is used in a crime, I am responsible for that crime.
Okay.
I can be charged with an accessory. I can be charged with contributing. It's not something that just, I'm going to go and spend a couple $100 and now I have a firearm to shoot somebody. That's not how it works.
Okay. All right, Kyle, thanks a lot for your call.
Thank you.
Take care. An email from Angel who says, yes, violent incidents happen, yet police and shootouts have horrible accuracy, so why would a less trained teacher be better? My dad was a small handgun specialist in the Marine Corps, and he always said to avoid being around wannabe heroes in emergencies. They don't maintain calm to deal with the situations effectively. Are you worried, Toby Hoover? I asked Joe Eaton about this. Are there some people that even who want to help and have a strong desire, maybe even for all the right reasons, but aren't fit to be managing firearm in an emergency?
Absolutely, and I think that there are an awful lot of school personnel and teachers and students and parents that are worried about that. If anybody has had children and gone through the system, they've certainly been aware of having some teacher along the line that is either going through some kind of personal trauma, maybe an illness, whatever. But to say across the board that we don't have to have those kind of people checked out, and more importantly, maybe under a separate what do I want to say, like a police officer is going to be monitored by his police department.
Mm-hmm.
Who is going to monitor the teachers that are now carrying guns for their capability, for their state of mind, whatever? And one of the questions that I ask people is, are you okay with people carrying guns in here that you know are really pretty angry? Now, we all have those. We have them in our families. We have them in our workplace. We have them in our neighborhoods. Is there somebody that you think is too angry to be carrying a gun?
Mm-hmm.
And I think you can magnify that when you're talking about carrying one into the schools. And if you talk to school psychologists, the Ohio Education Association had come out with some decisions, some of the safety training. There's Ken Trump with in Cleveland that speaks to this all the time. The person that was the president of the National Association of Psychologists is totally against it. So there's more than just, gee, some people want to do some good, and so let's train them all on how to handle a gun. But when you add that whole stress, it becomes a whole different picture. And these people that teach this gun stuff know that better than anybody. But there have been scenarios where they have put people in those decisions making, you know, right now, 5 seconds you've got to decide what you're going to do if you have that long.
Mm-hmm.
I've been told by an engineer that if you take more than 2 seconds to decide what you're going to do, it's already too late. But we want to trust our children to that. I think more importantly is, where are these young, mostly men, mostly white young men, getting their guns? They're getting them at home. They're getting them from grandpa's house. They're getting them from their uncle's house. And they're a child that is having difficulty, and yet people have not taken that next step to make sure that if they're going to own a gun, that they've got it someplace that those young people cannot access it. That in itself would make a difference.
James in Westerville, you're on the air. Hi, James.
Hello. I have a comment on the Virginia Tech. You were talking earlier with the Buckeye Association man. As I recall, the two men, citizens that were actually students that stopped the shooter, one of them had a gun, and that is what stopped the shooter while the other one was able to tackle him. That generally wasn't advertised in the media, but a private gun owner actually stopped the shooter in Virginia Tech before the police were able to get there. Secondly, nobody's mentioned that the 15,700 police, actual policemen, respondents to questions have all pointed, well, not all of them, over 70% thought that if teachers had private weapons, they would have been able to prevent so much of the violence in Newtown and other schools. They know that they're only there in time to write up the wreckage of what happened.
Mm-hmm.
An armed teacher is able to be there and stop it. All of the scenarios, or most of the scenarios that I hear, mm-hmm. I'm saying, no, don't let teachers have it.
Okay.
What if cases, the teachers know how to deal with students as much as a resource officer.
Okay.
The training that people get on concealed carry is very diligent.
Okay.
And
James,
they are as level-headed as you would want.
James, I appreciate your comment. We have to cut you a little short, though. We're running out of time. Thank you so much for your call. Toby Hoover, thanks to you for joining us today. We appreciate it.
Thank you so much for asking me.
Toby Hoover is the executive director of the Ohio Coalition Against Gun Violence. Olivia Rojas produced this show. Thanks to the All Sides staff, producer Michael DeBonis, associate producer Amy Jurevich, assistant producer Rachel Quimby, production assistants from Olivia Rojas, Justin English, Emmy Beach, Julia Hyder, and Leticia Wiggins, with video production by Rich Karsmitsky and Amber Karsmitsky. Alan DeCenzo is the composer of our theme music. Thanks very much for listening today. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.